This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Monday edition of the program after a long weekend. Good to be back. It's a great day outside. I'm back in studio, Jim. I'm sitting back in our beloved studio looking out the window at a very nice sunny day and remembering what it was like to do shows in a building with equipment and all the, you know, professional people around. It's really interesting.
Oh, very nice. That's good to hear, Bob. Is this something that you're going to continue to do every day now, be the point guard from the studio?
Yeah, that's what they've wanted us to do. I think one person per show will be coming in studio. So I think Stacy's coming in every day for their show. I think Paul's coming in every day for their show. And I'm coming in every day for our show.
Okay. Well, thanks for your efforts there, Bob. Will it make it easier for you to like play sound bites and those different things?
Yeah. Yeah, that'll definitely be easier because I've got control of all that. So I believe we have Dave with us now. Dave, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Can I trade with you, Bob? Yeah, I want to trade because I'm tired of being in my house.
You're sick of your home?
Yes. Sorry. Just can't take it anymore.
Well,
I need to get out.
Hopefully we'll all be back here soon. We got much to discuss today as baseball continues its march toward the opening of the season this month. Ryan Divish will join us at 3:30, John Clayton at 4. We got our buddy Michael Bumpus at 5 o'clock, and we'll definitely be talking to Clayton and Bumpus about the latest news in the NFL, which would be the 10-year extension that the Chiefs have thrown the way of Patrick Mahomes, keeping him locked up through 2031. Adam Schefter says the contract will be worth $450 million with an injury guarantee of $140. Now, we haven't seen any numbers yet as to what his overall guarantee is, but the total value of this contract, including the 2 years he still has, I think he's on the hook for less than $3 million this upcoming season. Can you believe that? And then they picked up his option for 21, which is like $24.8 million, and then this extension kicks in. But the overall value is the richest contract in American sports, and it surpasses Mike Trout. But the difference being, Mike Trout's contract fully guaranteed.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. Do you think in year 9 and 10, they're going to be going, man, you got him for a steal? He's making,
probably.
He's only making $45 million. Yeah. So, the total value, close to a half a billion. It's unbelievable. And you know, I didn't think they would do it at this point, you know, with, some of the, they're not so sure about the salary cap and everything. So, I can't think of a more deserving player other than Russell Wilson. I mean, everybody loves Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, he's probably in the next couple of years, if he gets another Super Bowl or MVP, whatever, he's going to be the face of the NFL.
Well, yeah, you look at it. So Patrick Mahomes, he's 24. He won't be 25 until September 17th. So at the end of this contract, he could still, I mean, the way quarterbacks are going now, Tom Brady playing at 43, Russell Wilson wanting to play into his 40s, Mahomes could be looking at another mega deal at the end of this contract. But, yeah, I look at it and I'm going, I'm with you, Dave. I think by 2028 or something like that, when he's 32 years old, he might be considered a bargain because we'll probably be seeing quarterbacks getting $50 or $60 million a year by then.
Well, and we'll see what the details are. I would imagine there'll be opt-outs in there somewhere where, you know, he can opt out after 5 years and, you know, reassess his situation there, or, you know, I'm sure there's all kinds of stipulations. We have not seen any of the guarantees outside of the injury guarantee. So, but I think you're right, Dave. I mean, you're making an investment, obviously, in a tremendous talent. There's no debating his talent, but by all accounts, you're investing in a guy you want to be the face of your organization, a guy who just seems to do and say the right things. He's never been accused of anything other than being a great guy. You know, he's a great teammate. Yeah. He's not in trouble off the field. That's the kind of guy you make that investment in at the most important position on the team and the face of the franchise. And you've got, at this point, zero concern about who he is in terms of his character.
Yeah, exactly. Great parents, we know, and just a good all-around guy. So, yeah, it's kind of what they did with Christian McCaffrey, and I think what Carolina did with him and what the Seahawks have done with Russell. It's like, this is the guy you want representing you. You know, you want this to be the go-to guy for, not to steal Jim's name. Jim's our go-to guy. But you know, I just think that you can't go wrong with this guy. So, and he's just so talented. But, you know, I remember back when he had that dislocated kneecap. I mean, that was kind of scary. And I bet you at that point, I mean, he was thinking, wow, I mean, I got a contract coming up here. I've got, you know, well, and he didn't know they were going to the Super Bowl at that point, but ended up being the Super Bowl MVP. But what a player, man. And he's fun to watch, too. And that, you know, I've said that about Lamar Jackson. I still like watching Lamar Jackson play more than I do Patrick Mahomes. But watching him make those crossbody passes and the no-look passes. And what was the one in Denver? I think he switched hands and threw it with his left hand.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great throw. Wasn't a spiral. It looked like Clayton's first pitch that he threw out. But still, it got there. Yeah, it got to him and end up making a play. So yeah, it was. He's just a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, I noticed somebody, and I should know who the somebody is. I think he's a guy from ESPN. He tweeted out today about Patrick Mahomes and all the categories that he's first in: passing yards per game, 302 yards, touchdown to interception ratio, 89-20 over his career, passer rating, 108.6, and then second quarter. I mean, this is the best category of all, and one of the things we really like about Russell Wilson is his win percentage at quarterback, and Patrick Mahomes is number two in the NFL at 78%. So, yeah, all these different things. The only downside that I can think of is if you're Chris Jones, you're probably sitting there, man, I want a new contract. How's this going to impact me? And I know Schefter and all the guys who cover the NFL will have more of those details as they become available.
Yeah, because again, we haven't seen what I would imagine there's some sort of signing bonus attached to this, because he's scheduled to make $2.8 million this season. There's got to be something coming his way with this deal, I would assume, this year. Not sure how that's going to work. Again, very few of the details have been released, and then he's on schedule for 24.8. But yeah, Jones might be thinking, all right, well, looks like I'm looking for a new home. I'm not going to get what I want here. They're not going to be in a position financially to pay me what I want. You know, it depends on how these guys have their own. You know, we've talked about the fact that they employ, you know, capologists who their sole function is to deal with salary cap and manipulate the cap. And we're going to move this money over here. We're going to turn this money into a bonus, and we're going to restructure this contract and back end this contract. I mean, it's incredibly hard to understand, but they just seem to have guys in every organization that can manipulate it and find money in situations where they look like they've got no money.
Yeah. Well, and the Seahawks got a great one too, but he shall not be named because he doesn't like to be talked about. But yeah, he does a really good job, and it's also not just about, you know, what's right in front of you. It's about, you know, managing the stuff down the road. But you know, the thing you brought up with Chris Jones, Bob, I was going to say, for a lot of people, it's timing and luck a lot of times. You know, like when you come into the NFL, you know, the guys that got those really big contracts, and I'm trying to remember, was it Stafford, I think, was one of the guys that got one of the last quarterbacks to get one of those big contracts before they went to, you know, salary cap control for the guys in the first contract control for the guys in their first 4 years. I mean, if you fall into that, you find an off season where somebody's desperate for something. I mean, it was just like for Chris Jones, my point is, I guess I just feel bad for him. It's just bad timing for him right now. And he's a defensive tackle. Same thing with Jadeveon Clowney. I feel like it was just more of a bad luck and a bad timing thing than anything.
Yeah, it's. I think, though, like you guys are saying, they'll figure out a way to get Chris Jones under contract. They'll find some wiggle room somehow, or maybe they'll have to release a player to get there and get it done. But I think it sets up. It's going to be fun to see in the AFC or in the NFL in general, really, with Patrick Mahomes going against Lamar Jackson there in Baltimore. Every year you've got this set up now.
Yeah.
I was just looking, Lamar Jackson, he's just 23. And so coming off the year that he had, 14-2 there with the Ravens, it should be a heck of a season with those two teams battling it out. And Patrick Mahomes, number one quarterback in the NFL, Russell Wilson, number two, and Lamar Jackson figures in there as well.
Oh, good news for the Chiefs. And again, he's a guy that, and we'll move on to baseball here in a moment, but He's one of those guys that I just love watching. I'm not a fan of the Chiefs. I'm not rooting for him to win. I love watching him the way I love watching Aaron Rodgers. And I know there are a lot of people that don't like Aaron Rodgers. They think he's whiny or he's a punk, whatever. I love watching him play. I love watching Peyton Manning play. There are just individuals that I love watching play. I'm not necessarily rooting for their team to win, but just as a football fan, I appreciate how good they are and how special they can be. And he's one of those guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing, he's got a great tight end there, too, in Kelsey. And, you know, I know Lamar Jackson has a bunch of really good tight ends. And so hopefully the Seahawks will have a really good one or a couple of them this year. And you know, I think it starts with Will Disley. But that's helped him. And I'm just trying to think, you know, some of the weapons that they have in Kansas City. And I guess, you know, bringing this back home, if you're, you know, for the cooking people, Jim, you know, what – how the receivers add up here for a guy like Russell Wilson, because they effectively did the same thing a few years ago with Russ, you know, paying him for a long period of time and a lot of money. And so that's your franchise guy. And so I guess I can kind of understand, you know, a little bit of that. Like, let's get some weapons in here so that your franchise player can be as effective as he possibly can.
I think they've got enough weapons for him. They've got Lockett and they've got Metcalf. They brought in Greg Olson. Will Disley's coming back. They got Chris Carson, but apparently, you know, there are others out there who want Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown, and we'll see if they get one of those two guys. But, Bob, I was just wondering, how can you root for Patrick Mahomes when he's throwing to Tyreek Hill, who you probably hope drops every ball that he throws to him?
I don't root for Tyreek Hill.
No, I know that. So it's kind of difficult because when Mahomes throws to him,
yeah,
do you hope that he drops it? Or
yeah, what? I hope it bounces off his face mask. I hope it bounces off his helmet. He falls down. He looks ridiculous. I hope it's a perfect pass for Mahomes, hits him between the numbers, and then he turns Tyreek Hill turns into Butterfingers and just shames himself repeatedly on national television. So everybody will go, oh, that was a dime from Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. He can't hang on to anything. That's what I'm looking forward to, Jim. How about that?
Okay. Well, that worked for me, Bob.
You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. 360 says, two seasons and you give Mahomes the top spot because of the offense he's in, and nothing else. You're all crazy. So,
he's not that good.
I apparently, he's a product of his offense.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you'd have to pay a little closer attention to the guy. He is darn good and tough. You come back from that dislocated kneecap the way that he did, and there's nothing to dislike about the guy. I'm sorry. He's just really freaking good. So good for him. Yeah. We'll see what the details are of that whole thing. Meanwhile, baseball continues to march towards the beginning of the season, but with the news that's out there, doesn't make you feel very optimistic about it starting well or starting on time. We've got the A's, the Nationals, the Cardinals, the Astros all had to cancel their practices today because of holdups with their COVID-19 tests that were taken last week. You've got seven NBA teams that have shut down their practice facilities after they all received at least one positive COVID test. Man, it just... It feels like it's building. I know we're looking forward to the seasons of all of these things. I'm looking forward to the NBA season, certainly baseball. NHL has got their plan in place. I'm just wondering we've touched on this before, but as we get closer to that date, these numbers keep piling up, some teams closing down their practices. It doesn't make you feel very – it puts a little dent in my optimism.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think it's going to be really hard for them to manage because you know, it's just it's a difficult thing anyway. And what do you pay attention to? Like we talked about last week, I mean, some guys are getting sick, a lot aren't. And, you know, during that time, do you have to lock them down? And then at some point they're able to come back. And then you have to have, like with baseball, you know, they have the taxi squad, which I'm sure, what is it, four guys? And some of them are four in case there's an injury, but obviously, a few of them in there in case somebody gets tested positive. So it's going to be a rocky start. You know, I feel like if nobody gets seriously ill from it, that, you know, it might actually start to, they'll figure out how to manage this thing, because just getting a test doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that he's going to get really sick. A lot of people are asymptomatic, don't really get sick from it. And you just got to make sure you get them away from, you know, other people. So it's going to be a kind of a rocky start. I wonder if this will kind of, you know, and I'll find a silver lining. Maybe the way that they manage this is the way that we can go ahead and open up back up our economy and people get back to work and everything. Maybe they'll find some things out. I'm not saying they're guinea pigs or anything, but, you know, maybe they'll be able to figure some things out positively that come out of this.
Yeah, I hope you're right, Dave, but it just seems like every single day there's something else. And like Bob was saying, so the A's, Nationals, Cardinals, they had to cancel their practices today, the holdups with the tests. There's always something that comes up. And I understand. Yeah. It's like I don't sit there and go, man, why can't they figure this out? Well, it's pretty hard to figure out when there's so many unknowns involved. So as much as I love the idea of baseball getting going and all this stuff about the bubble, the WNBA and the NBA down there trying to work things out, MLS trying to work the soccer out with their league too, but I more and more as each day goes by, I just have my doubts. And you guys know me. I always want to be optimistic and Mr. Sunshine. But
yeah.
How can you possibly get all, you know, sunshiny right now when you see all these things and you wonder how in the world they're going to? To me, it's almost like, why? I appreciate that you guys are trying to pull this off because I want sports to return. And then there's the other part of me that's going, man, what are you guys thinking? You know, you need to kind of hold off on this a little bit and, you know, cool your jets and pull the reins in a little bit. But I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's just so topsy-turvy all the time.
Well, I think they are thinking, though. I mean, listen, you're gonna have guys test positive. I mean, that's just how it's going to go. I feel like they're kind of learning as they go what's going to work. Mm-hmm. They implement all these things they've never had to implement before in terms of procedures, and this is how we're going to attack it. Well, they'll try it for a bit. They're going to find holes in the system and go, okay, we can't do that anymore. We're going to now do this. I mean, it's everybody's learning on the fly. I think I give credit to the NBA. I think they've been in front of everybody in terms of developing a plan. And there's going to be alterations to that plan because they haven't put it into effect yet. So once it gets put into effect, they're going to find the weak spots in it and go, okay, well, this isn't really make sense or this isn't very efficient. Let's try it like this. I mean, everybody's sort of putting the best they can, put the best foot forward, so to speak, and then they'll make adjustments on the fly. But I do believe they've put more than a ton of thought into how can we most effectively avoid contamination, if you will, keep everybody safe, and still put a product on the field.
Well, and you know, it seems like baseball probably has the best chance. I mean, you know, football, there's just no social. If you go by the guidelines, right? I mean, you can't wear a face a mask underneath your face mask, I don't think. And you know, you're outdoors, number one. So because you know they said they didn't see a lot of spikes in cases with the protests and things because they're outdoors. So you know, and then you know, there's not. Other than the pitcher and the catcher, if a guy's on base, whatever, everybody's pretty spread out. I don't know. It just seems like it lends itself, baseball does anyway, to maybe have the most success. But they're also going to be the ones with, you know, the most trial and error because they're the first ones in the pool.
Yeah, well, the NFL can certainly learn from what's going on with baseball starting the end of July and the schedule's coming out as we speak. I think we'll find out about the Mariners and the rest of the teams, how the schedule's going to shake out. And then the NBA, they can learn what they're doing from down there in the bubble. I'm sure they can pick up some different things. So I think you're right about that, Dave. That will at least help. And then we know that they might be wiping out the entire preseason, at least two games anyway.
Jim, are you going to be... I won't say happy. I know you're not going to be happy, but you've been along the lines of, hey, I think we're rushing into this. Why don't they, you know, start college football in January? And Larry Stone wrote a piece. I sent you guys the link last night, sort of echoing what you've been saying. Like, hey, I want sports as much as anybody, but is this all worth it? If they plow through, so to speak, and we do come up with a lot of positive tests, are you going to be over there shaking your head saying this was a bad idea? Or how do you feel about it?
No, because I don't know any more about it than the guy next to me. And, you know, as much as you want to believe Dr. Fauci knows what he's talking about, there are certain things that he doesn't know about it either. So I don't – there's just so many unknowns and uncertainties that I'm not going to be – no, I think when I turn on Root Sports and I watch the Mariners play, I'm going to be happy to be watching baseball. It's still going to seem weird. And I know how important it is to wear masks. It's still unsettling to me to see all these different masks, you know, guys in dugouts, guys – work working out with masks. I know, you know, people could text in and say, well, get over it, Jim. It's a new reality, the new normal or whatever that cliche is, you know. But it's still strange for me to see. And I guess, you know, these are the circumstances we're in. And if that's what it takes to get them on the field, I just worry about somebody dying, to be honest with you, Bob. And I know that, you know, if there's just one death, I guess you could chalk it up to the percentages and say, well, this was bound to happen. But I admit that there's, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, what if somebody dies in one of these sports leagues? And then what will people be saying then?
Yeah, it's going to, hopefully we don't have to cross that bridge. It doesn't feel like, you know, the odds tell you that you will be facing that, but you know, maybe you know, some of these things they have in place will be able to effectively avoid something like that. I don't know. We're going to see what anybody's tolerance is for this as they all try to figure it out as we go. All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Over the weekend, numerous MLB players have opted out of playing the 2020 season due to concerns of COVID-19. Those players include Dodgers pitcher David Price, Braves outfielder Nick Markakis, and Braves pitcher Felix Hernandez.
Yeah, Felix. And we, you know, we're waiting to see what Mike Trout's going to say. He's got a baby on the way. He's had a couple statements out there that DJ and I were talking before the show, both leaning towards, I'm thinking he's not going to play. And we'll see if that turns into some sort of domino effect that we talked about before, if other players will then feel more empowered to stand up and say, you know what, I just don't feel good about it. I don't know. But interesting surrounding Felix that he's going to take this season off. I wonder if he attempts to you know, keep the career going next season. I told you guys last night in the email, as much as I want him to be happy and have success, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if the only team he ever pitched a legit game for were the Seattle Mariners. I wasn't dying to see Felix in a Braves uniform.
Yeah, I wonder what this is going to do for the trajectory of, I mean, is this it for him? I mean, I know he had kind of a hard time adapting a little bit, and, you know, I wonder if this could be it for him. I know he's got small children. Actually, his kids are probably grown up now, but, yeah, it's just it's a tough for everybody, and I'm trying to look. How long's Markakis, DJ, been in the league? He's an older guy. Or,
yeah, he's a solid veteran.
He's 36 years old. Yeah. So I mean, these are guys that, you know, they've made a lot of money, and you know, and they're also a little bit older. So I guess you can understand that everybody's going to have their own reasons.
Yeah, Bob, I appreciate where you're coming from with Felix, but I was looking forward to seeing him with the Braves. I wanted to see if he could get on the comeback road and see if he could find the king again. And I know that it would have been a semblance of the king of what he once was, but I was interested to follow his career path and see how it was going to work out. Now, maybe next year at the age of 35, he comes back, and maybe the year off will help him with his arm, how many innings he's pitched over his career, being in the majors since he was 19 years old. So we'll see how it shakes out. But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm interested to see what Mike Trout's going to do, because I think there might be other players who follow suit after him.
On Friday, the Cleveland Indians announced they will review their long-debated nickname, saying, quote, "We are committed to making a positive impact in our community and embrace our responsibility to advance social justice and equality." This came hours after the Washington Redskins said they would do a, quote, "thorough review of their own team name."
A lot of momentum behind these two teams, specifically in Washington with the Redskins, which is frankly a name that should have been changed long ago. It's a flat-out slur. I mean, I don't think there's any saying it's been around forever and people that support the team don't support a slur. It's just what's been there. Just because it's been there that long doesn't make it right, and it's not right. As far as the Indians, they got rid of the Chief Wahoo logo, which was a step in the right direction. I'm curious to see, and Jim, I know you found some odds on what the new team names are going to be. I think this is a huge marketing opportunity for both teams, or merchandising. Because, A, if they both change their names, fans are going to be just absolutely ravenous for the old school gear, because it will immediately become collectible, right? So they're going to want all the old gear, and then everybody's going to want the new gear, whatever the team name is, whatever, you know, the Spiders, the Red Tails, whatever they're coming up with. I think both teams are in a great position just in terms of merchandising to truly capitalize on this.
Is one of the options Spiders?
I think so. Isn't it, Jim?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was just looking around for what I sent you guys. I think Red Tails is number one, the betting choice. There's also Washington Generals. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. No. The Globetrotters and Generals. No, you can't call them the Washington Generals. Yeah. There's some different options there. I was kind of surprised that Red Tails or something like that was the number one choice.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough creepy animal logos or, like a bat or a snake or a spider.
The cobras.
Or like a flea. Yeah, a cobra,
a
rattlesnake.
A flea.
Well, you got the diamondbacks.
A tick. That's great. All right, there you go. Good stuff. We'll talk more about that. Mariners players began their summer camp this past weekend. We're going to talk with Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times about what he's seen so far. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Mariners have started their summer camp, which is always interesting to say. And a man who's had to come back from Montana to cover the whole thing. He covers the team for the Seattle Times. He is with us, as always, our buddy Ryan Divish is here. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Does it feel weird? You've been in Montana for what feels like months, and now you're back covering summer camp.
Yeah, I'm missing my mom's cooking, their black lab, and just, not having to do much. But it's actually good to be back working. It's like that first day, it was real weird to come into the park and, you pull in and they got all these people standing there. You got to get your temperature tested. They really check you pretty closely for a lot of different things, ask you some questions, and then getting in and wearing the mask all the time and stuff, it's an adjustment. But once you start hearing the sounds of baseballs being hit and start watching that kind of stuff, it's pretty cool then.
Divish, what's it like as far as, the social distancing and the masks and everything for the players? Are they, you watched them, take batting practice, fielding probably. How is it looking? Does it look drastically different the way they're, running on and off the field and how they're interacting?
Yeah, it definitely is a little different. The masks are the most noticeable thing. One, we're up in the press box. We can't be down on the field like we normally do at, spring training, where you get kind of close. And then with the masks on, it's hard to tell who is who with players that have them on or with the coaches. And even from a distance on the field, you can't tell who some of the players are. There's a bunch of pitchers walking out there and it's a bunch of 6'4" white guys with beards. I don't know the difference between all look. It's just basically a reliever, that's what we always joke. If you're a 6'4" white guy with a beard, you're a reliever and we don't know who you are. Especially because they have their hats on and stuff. But, the other thing was, if you ever been, even before games, when they take batting practice, players and coaches all hang around the batting cage. The Mariners started to do that a little bit on that first day, and they were reminded not to, and now you see it. Players are just kind of all over. You'll see some players on the field with masks. D. Gordon is wearing a mask at all times. Of course, it's a designer one with his Flash logo. Kyle Seager's worn his mask most of the time. And then other players will wear masks at intermittent times and other players or coaches are close by them or they're having kind of conversations. They'll put the mask on, but they're not required to wear it. Once they step on the field, they don't have to wear it. They only have to wear it in the clubhouse, in meetings, and when they're in that kind of stuff. But once they're out there doing baseball activity, they don't have to wear it. But you're seeing more and more guys trying to experiment to see what's comfortable and what isn't.
Hey, Ryan, we just learned that the Mariners are going to open up against the Astros on July 24th in Houston. What's it going to be like for you going on the road and covering the team, or are you going to just cover them from home?
I've asked to go on the road, at least for that first series, more than anything. I think that's a pretty important one. This is a big story. Obviously not as big in terms of the overall circumstances of what we're dealing with, but, in sports, these are going to be kind of a big deal, and being there and being able to write about kind of the atmosphere or lack thereof, the aesthetics of it, what it's like, offer people kind of information about, what it's like to be at these games, what it's like for the players, I think is important. You know, I still haven't been completely clear by the times. I think there's some logistical things in terms of travel, like, I guess maybe, like, you know, risks for me, or, you know, I had to sign a waiver or something, which I would do because it's my job. But all those things have to be taken in consideration. But I do think it's important to at least be there for the first road series to see what it's like, you know, because honestly, we don't know how long this is going to last. So I kind of want to be there for as many games as I can in case there were something to happen and be shut down. But, you know, going into Houston isn't exactly ideal either, because that's a pretty big hotspot right now.
So do you get the sense, Ryan, that, and we're waiting to hear what Mike Trout's going to say. We've seen Markakis say, you know, I'm done for the season, and other players have stepped up and said, all right, David Price, I'm not playing this year. I really feel a guy of the stature of Trout, if he comes out and says, you know what, I'm just not comfortable for these reasons, whatever they are, that it might be the domino that'll empower some others that might feel a little weird about being the one to raise their hand and say, I don't want to play. Do you see any fallout from that if Trout does say, you know what, I'm going to sit this year out?
I mean, there will be some, but Major League Baseball did a pretty poor job of marketing Mike Trout anyways. You know, like, they're terrible at marketing their players. So while he may be the best player in the game, you could argue whether or not he's the biggest star in the game, because, one, he plays in Anaheim where they don't have, you know, they haven't been good in a long time, so he hasn't been on the biggest stage. And then, two, you know, like I said, MLB doesn't market him, the Angels don't market him, and by nature, he is not a very outgoing person or somebody who seeks the limelight. I mean, he's talked more and been more interesting to the media in this last 8 to 10 months than he has for his entire career, and I don't know if that's the maturity or understanding that it's part of it now, or, you know, the kind of understanding that he has a voice and he probably should say things because he is the best player. But, you know, if they start playing games and he's not a part of it, you still have Aaron Judge and you have Mookie Betts and you have other guys that they can push to the forefront that are also just as good and just as charismatic, and that, you know, you can kind of sell on that. I mean, I think once games get going, that will be important. But it would be a loss if Mike Trout doesn't play. And what's kind of interesting is the juxtaposition. Like, we talked to Braden Bishop today about opting out or not playing. And he's like, it's not really an option for me. Like, where he's at in his career, where he's at financially and stuff, he had to play. And I think that, you know, once they kind of get going on that, I mean, I think that's what the Mariners players are different in a lot of regards. They don't have guys that could really opt out because they're not in a position financially or in their career to do so.
All right, Divish, you said you were out there. What'd you see? Who stood out to you? Were you able to figure out anything, or was it just kind of the new normal?
Oh, man, like, Jerry Kelenic has apparently been doing a little lifting. I mean, that guy came out, he's yoked. I was like, you know, he wasn't small to begin with, you know, and you can tell he spent some time in the weight room before, but, like, that kid walked on the field, and he looks like he's gained about 10 pounds of muscle just in the off season, or in this time away from spring training, lifting and doing stuff. So, you know, he looks good. I thought Kyle Lewis today hit a homer in live BP that was just a missile. It was impressive to say the least. I thought Marco looked pretty good. You know, we haven't seen a lot of the pitchers through IBP yet. I mean, you say Kikuchi's been, you know, throwing 150 pitches every day, it seems like, in the bullpen. But I don't know. It's kind of hard in these workouts. I think when they start inter-squad games on Friday, that will be easier to kind of determine who is looking good and who isn't.
Hey, Ryan, Felix Hernandez opted out. He's not going to continue this year with the Braves. Do you think we've seen the last of him, or do you think he'll launch another comeback next year?
I think he'll try and come back next year. I know what he said to you guys or Shannon or whoever on the radio about wanting to, you know, 200 wins and a certain number of strikeouts. Can't do that if you don't play. But I was surprised because, you know, he showed up there. He was there for a few days. He, you know, I follow him on Instagram. He did post some videos of himself working out, riding the exercise bike this off season and stuff like that. But I mean, my guess is, like, he was going to make the team out of spring training because Cole Hamels was injured. But my thinking is that he looked around, looked at what they saw, had around in Atlanta, and probably realized he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen. And, you know, maybe not in the rotation, or if it was a six-man rotation, really not getting that opportunity to show teams what he had. And maybe, you know, in his heart, he wasn't going to be ready for this kind of 60-game season, and he could only do damage to his reputation or to his chances for signing a contract next year by playing. And there's also the health risks. You know, I don't know what his family, his parents are like in terms of their health, but all those things, I think, factored into it. And, I mean, if you look at the rest of the Braves, you've got Markakis not playing now. I think you're going to see a few more people not opt out to play, the guys that are more financially sound that, you know, maybe are a free agent after the season. And why take the risk of ruining your reputation or getting injured when next year could be a full season instead?
Ryan, we're up against the clock here, but I got to ask you quickly. We've seen movement in name changes potentially for the franchise in Washington, and now the Cleveland Indians are talking the same thing. Do you think they should change their name? And if so, what's your vote? What name would you like to see?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, I'm all for it if they believe that, you know, if there are people that are offended by the names, and I know there are, then change it. You know, that's fair. You know, like, if, you know, my mom is Japanese, and if I felt like there was a derogatory name out there, nickname against Japanese people, I would feel the same. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe the Cleveland Spiders would be cool. I don't know. The Washingtons never win a playoff game would be a pretty good game. Pretty good name for them as well.
Well, we'll see if we can submit that one. That might gain some traction. That's good stuff. Ryan, we appreciate it. Welcome back to town, man. Good to have you back. Stay safe out there. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. Doing a great job covering the Mariners. We've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. We go back to May 17th, 1999, when Edgar Martinez hit two home runs versus the Twins. That is brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 54. Well, we touched on it there. Felix is sitting this season out, so will he come back after that? Do you want to see him come back? We'll get deeper into that conversation next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. You guys can start texting in any of your football questions right now if you'd like. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And we'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can at the top of the hour. But We talked to Divish about Felix there for a moment, and Felix Hernandez was attempting to keep his career going. We had him on with us, I don't know, it's probably been, a couple months ago now that we had Felix on, and it was really a fun conversation, but we talked about, you know, how does he see his career ending? How long does he want to play?
No, actually, I'm not thinking about that yet, because I think that I still got more to do on the game of baseball. And I know I can pitch. I got a lot of weapons to go out there and get people out. But actually, I don't know. I'm going to go year by year because my goal is to get to 200 wins and to get to 3,000 strikeouts. So if I get to that goal, I can hang my spikes. I'm done.
I don't know if he's going to reach those numbers. I can appreciate that he's got goals and he wants to continue his career. And I would never tell a guy, you know, unless he's a fighter, hey, man, you need to stop. If a team's going to employ him, then he's good enough to be on that roster. But as a fan, just as a Mariner fan, there's some satisfaction to knowing he only played for the Mariners. I don't want to talk about, well, yeah, then he went to the Braves and he lasted half a season. He wasn't very good. It's sort of like talking about Griffey with the White Sox. Just doesn't feel right to me. So, you know, for him, I hope he can continue after the season, but it's not going to break my heart if he doesn't.
Yeah, It's kind of a little bit sad, I guess, because he's not here anymore. He just meant so much to this team. And, you know, in the beginning, I didn't, what's the big deal with the, you know, the King's Court and everything. But then once you get to know Felix and interview him a couple of times, it's not like I know him, but I mean, feel like I get a handle of what kind of guy he is. I'm going to miss him, but I don't know how you felt, Jim, because I know we interviewed him a few times and down at spring training, and then it just seemed at the end there that it's not like he was in denial, but he you know, just kept repeating the same mantra. I'm still the king. I'm still the king. And I'm like, yeah, you are, man. I love that about him. But he didn't seem to take the steps that I think Service and DePoto wanted him to take in order to be, you know, adjust to being a guy who didn't have all of his best stuff anymore. And, you know, I remember they're talking to him about, you know, whether or not you want to be in the Hall of Fame. And so, yeah, it's just been kind of an interesting little trip going from, you know, starting paying attention and watching how dominant he was to, you know, sort of the twilight years now and what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's a tough one, Dave, because I am rooting for him, and I was following what he was doing down there in spring training with the Braves, and 13 and two-thirds innings, his ERA under two, and you take it for what it did, 14 strikeouts and 13 and two-thirds innings, so it looked really good. But there's a part of me that's thinking, man, why didn't you listen to Service and DePoto? Why didn't you, you know, listen to your pitching coach? And they were trying to help you, and yeah, I don't know if he was in denial, but he was certainly delusional. I mean, this still the king. You know, as much fun as the King's Court was, I don't think it did him any favors toward the end of his career, because all these people out there chanting, KKKKKKK, okay, that's fine, but I think they wanted Felix, with his assortment of stuff, to not really be going for strikeouts, to pitch more to contact. And boy, I mean, he's still got such great movement on his pitches, and it must have really been frustrating to Service to see his career in Seattle end the way that it did. And I don't like hearing him, you know, and nobody cares about wins with a pitcher anymore. So what if he gets to 200 wins? Everybody knows what it was like in Seattle. He was losing a bunch of 2-1 games. He was still a great pitcher. He won the Cy Young that one year when his win-loss record wasn't that great.
13 wins.
Yeah, and then to be pursuing this strikeout, I mean, okay, great milestone, 3,000 strikeouts, but at this point in his career, he shouldn't be pursuing strikeouts. He should end up getting strikeouts just as a result of throwing good pitches but not trying to strike out batters. So, yeah, it's a, I don't know, is conundrum the right word? I don't even know what the word is, but I'm torn because I'm still pulling for him, but that whole delusional I'm the king stuff, that's got to go.
Well, but, and Dave, I would guess you'd have a better sense of this. Is that just the mentality you need to compete at that level? Maybe it's not him tuning out everybody, and I know he did to a certain extent here in Seattle with what you just brought up, Jim, and it's all true, but in order to just maintain that competitive edge, if you will, does he still have to have that self-belief? You still have to have that drive. I am the king. I can still do it. I can still get this done. I mean, that's sort of how I guess I don't take it quite as literally as Jim is taking it.
I'm sort of with Jim. Haven't been there listening to him. I mean, it did seem, I didn't want to call him delusional, but
you don't think he'd appreciate that?
Well, no, and honestly, it was kind of sad. I mean, I just, I guess I would call it like he was kind of in denial that, you know, still calling himself the king. Well, yeah, I mean, you're the king in everybody's hearts, Felix. I mean, love him, love that guy and what he meant to this city, and you know, him moving his family here, and he loves it here, and never, I mean, he had opportunities to leave, and he got some criticism for that too. There was times where he could have gone on to other places, and there were some that said that if he was more competitive and really wanted to win a championship, he would have, you know, signed somewhere else because he had chances to leave. But yeah, so I love that about him. But, yeah, I did get kind of the sense that I guess the reason why I would say delusional is because, you know, it wasn't like he was taking the necessary steps, like working really hard to get – like, remember he worked out with Iron Phil or whatever the guy was named, the trainer.
Iron Glenn, was
Iron
it?
Joe. Glenn. Yeah, there you go. Iron Glenn and Phil. Phil's not
Iron.
That's not
Phil.
A tough guy name, right? Yeah. No, but sorry, all the Phils out there. But yeah, I think. Yeah, somebody just said. I think you just did, Dave. I didn't want to call him delusional. I guess he was kind of in denial, is what it was. And then, you know, he didn't really. It seemingly take the steps to adapt to what he was. You know, without all of his best stuff. So it was kind of strange and kind of anticlimactic for the way his career ended here.
All right, there you go. We'll see what happens with Felix, but we know for certain he is not pitching this season, the abbreviated 60-game season. He has opted out of that. Meanwhile, are we sure there's going to be a football season in 2020? We'll ask the professor about that. Again, if you've got football questions for John Clayton, you can start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. The professor joins us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.